And we're back. Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm your host, Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param, and I'm joined by... Alex Agunas, the Everyman Gamer. Hey, Alex.
Hi. Something feels weird today.
I think it's a pretty normal day.
Are you sure? Okay. Let's keep going. Maybe I'm just thinking, well, it's whatever.
Okay, and I'm also joined by my other co-host, James Ballard. Hey, James.
You're right. It smells purple in here, and that usually doesn't smell purple. Something's up.
Well, I mean, All the art's purple. I very much made sure this show was covered in purple because we couldn't do blue and gold because everybody else was doing blue and gold.
It smells purple, and usually it smells blue.
Oh, all right. Mm-hmm. And we've got a special guest. Hello, Owen Casey Stevens, of course, one of the leads of Starfinder. Hey, Owen, how you doing?
Hey, folks. I am doing well. And yeah, today feels like maybe this isn't set up exactly the way it was last time we did this. Almost like we're in a alternate reality from the last time we did No Direction Beyond. No Direction Very Beyond. And I think that's appropriate because what we're going to be doing today is taking a look at the Witchwarper class, which is, of course, the class that deals with alternate realities. So if things seem a little different, if you don't understand why we've got one co-host instead of another, or we're doing things slightly differently, then you're probably from the reality where people don't have dirigibles as opposed to every other reality where people do.
Right. It's why wouldn't you use your dirigible? It's so much more efficient than, you know, taking your sedan or a bicycle.
I have no idea what a dirigible is.
It's an airship.
Oh, why not just say airship then? Is that a better word?
No, it's a specific type of airship. It's like the best type of airship.
It's very clearly the best type of airship.
So it's not just a ship attached to a balloon.
No, it is that.
Well, a dirigible has an internal rigid frame as opposed to a balloon, which does not.
Right. You need to watch the Little Nemo anime, Alex, and you will appreciate dirigibles.
Wait. I thought Little Nemo was a Western show about a creepy little kid who goes into people's dreams riding a magic bed. That's an anime?
They made an anime for it, and it's awesome. And then they made a Nintendo game after the anime, which is also awesome.
Or at least
I don't even know what reality I'm in anymore. Let's go.
So, the Witchwarper is from the Character Operations Manual, and that was the book for Starfinder that added several new classes, the Witchwarper, Biohacker, and Vanguard. And it was the first Paizo book to add new classes to Starfinder, which made it a very interesting introduction to the game. And the Witchwarper is specifically the spellcasting class from that. It, of course, joins the Mystic and the Technomancer from the core rulebook as the three spellcasters from Starfinder. It's got, as you'd expect for a spellcaster, it's got 5 hit points per level, 5 plus stamina con points per level. It's a charisma-based spellcaster, which seems obvious since we previously had an int-based spellcaster in the Technomancer and a wisdom-based spellcaster in the Mystic, so that was a niche that had not been filled. It's got 4 plus int mod skill ranks per level. It's got culture and diplomacy and intimidate, a lot of charisma-based skills, which makes sense. But also things like physical science, which maybe are because it deals with alternate realities. And then it's got a secondary attack progression, secondary fort save, secondary will save, and a primary reflex save, which I believe also makes it the only class in Starfinder that primarily has a reflex save bonus. One presumes that's because they have a tendency to deal with explosions and things that go boom.
That's funny. And
then it's got the spells known and spells per day using the same progression that the Mystic and the Starfinder or the Technomancer do. So far, there's only one class-based spell progression in the game, although who knows, someday they may change that. Its primary class features are the Infinite Worlds, which I think we will discuss in greater length soon. But it's basically a way that you swap out a prepared spell, you swap out a spell slot for a specific kind of effect that you get by sucking elements of other realities into yours. It's got Paradigm Shift, which is basically it's pick a power powers every few levels. And then it's got things like alternate outcome, which allows it to change the result of a specific role. And that comes with compound sight that affects skills and gives you insight bonuses and stuff. And that is the core of the class. It's a very popular class. The original design was, I happen to know, designed by Amanda Hammond, who's one of the managing developers over at Paizo. And it was developed by me. And it went through a extensive public playtest, which had a lot of feedback, and the playtest version had some major differences. Folks, what are your first impressions of our Witch Warper?
Thematically cool, and makes you think outside the box with how you go to situations.
All right, I find that last comment really fascinating. Could you delve into that just a little bit more?
Well, there's a lot of things that they do that are what you'd think of as like really situational. And they're not things that are going to be applicable all the time, unless you find ways to make them more happen more often. Like if you have something that does making things difficult terrain, you might want to take more fights inside buildings rather than letting people fly around. So it makes you kind of plan around what you have the ability to do.
Although, interestingly, they can turn air into difficult terrain, which is something that there is not, to the best of my knowledge, any other way to do that. But they can literally draw in heavy winds or heavy rain or even giant leafy plants from other realities and say, okay, this is difficult terrain, even if you're flying through it.
Yep, it's a neat ability we'll get to in a bit.
Alex? My first thoughts, I was completely sold on the flavor. The reality bender class is awesome and I love it. And my second thought after like looking through the class, it's like progression, how it's built, it's like bones. This feels like Amanda Hammond's personality as a class. Mostly in that the class definitely debunks some very traditional styles of like being built for spellcasters. As far as I know, this is the only spellcasting class I've ever seen that doesn't have wisdom as a primary saving throw bonus, among other things. Like that for me, like stood out immediately. I was like, huh, you got good at dodging. You're not like magically strong in the brain. Like definitely it's the only one of the three in Starfinder that has a good reflex save period. But even in like Pathfinder, I don't think there are any classes in first edition Pathfinder that don't have a good will save, and I don't think that's a bad thing, but it's a thing I noticed immediately.
Also funny, I think funnily enough, they're the only spellcaster in Starfinder that are natively proficient with grenades.
Yes.
and those things sort of speak to a thematic link, right? You've got grenades and reflex saves tied together.
Are grenades, are technomancers proficient with grenades?
I have forgotten because it's been a long time since I've ever wanted to use a grenade as a technomancer.
Oh, they're not. James, you're right. They're not proficient with grenades. That surprises me.
Well, a technomancer can set up a spell grenade and they become proficient with it. But the fact of the matter is that technomancers mostly aren't set up to be lobbing these area effect objects instead of doing spell fire or putting down covering fire with a small arm. So, a technomancer isn't necessarily, the technomancers aren't proficient in powered armor either. They're not proficient with all forms of technology just because technology is where they focus their magical abilities.
Yeah, but Magic Man Go Boom is like Magic Man Go Boom. I guess the Witch Warper is there for me then.
Yeah, well, and the Witch Warper was very much designed to have a very different play style than the Mystic or the Technomancer. It was set up to have abilities that caused it to operate in play differently, even above and beyond the fact that it's got its own spell list. And it's got a lot of the same spells, right? All three classes have a certain amount of overlap. There's no point in having three versions of Detect Magic, right? You take one spell, you give it to everybody. But they do have a lot more of conditional spells and environmental spells by design.
Mm-hmm.
But they are also a class that seemed like if you could make one change to an area, making that change be, oops, I have a grenade after all, is a quick and easy way to fight.
Can I change my first impression answer?
Yeah.
Feels like a first edition Pathfinder Mesmerist.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because a lot of their abilities either change, like stuff around them temporarily. Sometimes there's some permanent stuff, but a lot of it's more temporary. Uh-huh. And then the rest of like their spell list is a lot of debuffs rather than buffs for yourself.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. All right. I can see that. I was, when you said think it feels like Mesmerist, I was thinking of like the play style where you basically like, you debuff enemies and to make them more susceptible to your best spells. And like, that's actually something I don't know that this class does very well, but, I do see what you're saying about a class that like changes stuff around it as they want it. That does feel very Mesmeristy. I agree.
And one of the things that we focused on when we were designing this class was, to give it more of a focus on battlefield control. On the ability to manipulate the environment to your advantage. And one of the reasons we focused on that was that it was not something that any of the classes particularly focused on. The closest you have really, right, is like the barricade feat, which anyone can qualify for. Mostly it gets used by mechanics in my experience, but you can put in the ranks necessary to pick it up and then you can give yourself a barrier anywhere you go. But as a class, it's not something that we had done in Starfinder. So when we had a big long, and this is a little insider baseball stuff, when we had a big long meeting trying to pin these down, that was done offsite, Rob McCurry was kind enough to let us hang out in his Lego room and work on these classes. One of the things that we talked about was how can we have it mechanically be different and thematically be different, and how do those things link together? And that's how you get stuff like the fact that they are proficient with grenades and reflex is their best saving throw. That's an effort to put those things together. Param, I know you have not done a whole lot of Starfinder, but you are familiar with the class. Do you have a first impression that you would give for the Witchwarper?
I mean, I want to agree with James that this class is thematically awesome from the moment you even read its name. And I very much like the idea of just screwing magically with reality to get maybe not the result you wanted. And for some of that, I can understand. It's also why I kind of understand that they do not have good will saves and so on, which is if you are messing with this much, it seems like a bad idea to be a Witchwarper. And if you're going to go for it, maybe you're going to be more susceptible to the absolutely chaotic forces that you decided to tap into for giggles.
That's a very Lovecraftian view.
It's true that if someone asked me what of the three main spellcasting classes is most likely to be driven mad, I'd go with a Witchwarper, right? They're the people that seem to be most trifling with forces they do not and cannot understand.
Like, and even if you don't do that, you're going to start losing track of which reality you're in at this any given moment.
Yeah, I think that is also an accurate description.
Well, I think that's very fun because it kind of goes back to the iconic Witchwarper's backstory where, like, as a child, he made himself sick because he decided to witchwarp every food he ate into, like, sugary sweets. And then he ends up, like, banishing his friends to another reality and has no idea how to get them back and is now carrying all of this, like, survivor's guilt for basically having killed them from this existence.
He made his friends imaginary.
Yeah. Which sort of... It's an accidental, terrible thing to do.
Yes. Some summoner has new Eidolons.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that the summoning spells are on the Witchwarper list. So far, when I've seen them in play, Witchwarper summoners just have more fun than any other summoner. Because I frequently see them, you know, I will summon a number of elementals, but the elementals are all like standing around holding frying pans because they were cooking before you put them into this reality. It's that kind of thing. It's just thematic and people have fun with.
Oh, man.
And this is all, I really think that part of the brilliance of this class was that core idea of, yes, it's a spellcaster. Yes, it does all the magic stuff you expect. But we have hooked it into the science fiction concept, right? Alternate realities and being able to move from one different dimension to another. That's a very science fiction idea. And so having that be the anchor of a class really lets it have a very strong thematic feel that can stand up to the Technomancer and the Mystic, which have their own very different feel. So even if you have all three of these people in a group, in addition to doing a lot of ranged combat, you your technomancer might be a junk sword technomancer, but probably a lot of ranged combat. You're going to have some very different approaches to things. They're going to have different strengths and weaknesses compared to, for instance, having a wizard and a sorcerer, which frequently tends to feel like a good deal more overlap.
Mm-hmm. Junk sword technomancer, more like best sword technomancer.
you might be biased about the junk sword.
I am 100% biased. Not only did I write that spell, but I've gotten to see it in play several times.
And I'm also biased because I developed it and I asked for it. I think it's great. Yes.
I mean, there was like three different versions of Enoch that were written based around the tech sword. So I can understand the appeal.
It's a cool sword. It's a cool spell. And it's the sort of thing, again, that I think people can get a feel of very strongly what this is supposed to be like, that has a strong theme to it. Mm-hmm. Do we want to start diving down into their actual class features a little more strongly?
Yeah, sure.
So at first level, they get infinite worlds. And the way infinite worlds works is you expend a spell slot to create a new supernatural effect. I happen to know that this mechanism exists because there were two really common pieces of feedback about the original Infinite Worlds in the playtest. The first was that Infinite Worlds didn't do enough, that Infinite Worlds only made these minor changes, and it was supposed to be this iconic part of your character, but it was very, very rarely worthwhile, and you couldn't do it very often. The other was that Infinite Worlds did too much, that if you compared it to what the similar abilities that technomancers and mystics are getting at first level and second level, etc., it was more useful than those were, so that they could save their spells for more other things. So when we're told this doesn't do enough to be interesting, but it does too much for power balance, we had to find a way to both make it more useful, but also not as much additional power above and beyond the spells you had. So it effectively becomes this mutable variable level spell that you have a list of spell effects, magic effects that you can create by expending your spell. And that means that you don't have to worry about having that spell prepared. As James was saying, some of these things can be very, very situational. So the fact that you've got a big long list of things you can do means that you're more likely to find a useful situation for them, right? Mm-hmm. Dazzling creatures for one round, something you can do at first level, does not seem like a huge difference, but dazzled is -1 to ranged attacks, right? So if you've got a whole bunch of people that have cover who are shooting at you and you need to lower their ability to shoot at you, that is a circumstance where you might say, well, okay, it's going to be worth it here. Whereas you wouldn't want to have a spell that you selected from one of your very rare spells known just to dazzle people as a mid to high level spell, because it just won't be useful enough often enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of these things you create are instantaneous and some are environmental. So some happen immediately and some actually change the environment for a period of time, all the way up to being able to, for example, reduce the hardness of objects in an area by 50% or increase their hardness by 10. Which means that you can make it much easier or much harder to drill through the side of a building.
Man, if only you had that in that one scenario where your players are trying to break through that wall, James.
No, Starship Bulkhead is like hardness 64. It would have still... I'll tell that story another time. Better time.
That's a great story. In another reality, you told the story right now.
In another reality, that story is anything but sad.
I'm just imagining the finish on the starship going from glossy to matte, and that's the entire effect.
So, have you all looked through these powers and have feelings on them and when you get them?
Yeah, I think that it's very interesting because when you looked at the original Infinite Worlds, it very much looked like it was trying to be almost like witch hexes, but understanding that like Pathfinder 1's witch hexes, a lot of them were too strong. And so like it was very conservative, and I was very much in the group of people who thought that they didn't really do enough. They didn't really live up to the legacy of what a witch was in a Paizo D20 game. But, you know, seeing these new versions of them, I can kind of look at it and be like, all right, these look more like the class feature is less, here's a thing I can do, and more, you have an extra spell at every spell level, and it's taken from a very specific list that is part of your class. That's kind of what it looks like. I think that it's it has a very strange but good mix of doing things that are like, hey, one of them can slow, one of them can penalize attacks, one of them grants concealment. So like all of them do very different things. It's very different from, say, a spell like Mind Thrust, which is a very level spell where higher level of versions of Mind Thrust are always better than lower level versions because the higher level version does more damage, or higher level versions of Shrink Object are always better because it makes more things smaller. This is like, at different spell levels, you might still want to be throwing out that first level environmental effect to make things difficult terrain, even if you have fourth level spells. And I think that's a very both brave and interesting space for this, because none of them really, not really get like to a point where they're bad. You know, some of them become less optimal, but all of them do something that's unique in their niche.
I kind of think that when I was looking through it, the effects almost seemed like they were about as powerful as a spell of one level lower would be. For example, you can dazzle at first level, but that's something you can do with a cantrip if you were dedicated to it. And you know, difficult terrain is something that you could you can do with a cantrip for one square, but not a big area. That one's kind of cool. But then you get to like the hazard, and it's just this constant, very tiny damage, and that's something a first level spell could do, all the way up to the six, where you're screwing around with hardness and basically messing with the equivalent of damage reduction, and that is, you know, again, that's a very high level spell kind of thing, but not max level spell.
I would make the argument for the first level dazzled one that it hits everything in that area. It says each creature in the area. It's not a single target dazzle. Mm-hmm. It's an AoE dazzle. And in Pathfinder first edition, the mass dazzle spell was also, I think, a first level spell. Mm-hmm. So it seems pretty comparable to me. I don't know how, like, that's a good one that falls into what James was saying earlier, though, because you're not always going to have multiple targets that you need to dazzle. And if you're in a situation where there is only one person to dazzle, then that ability is definitely only as good as a cantrip for you in that situation. It is a very situational ability.
You have access to it. And I think what at least gets me excited about the Infinite Worlds is at the fourth level, because those are two things. One is just direct damage, and it's not as high, I think, as other damage spells for that level, but it's a reflex for half instead of negate, so you're always getting something. And the other one is creating blocks of difficult terrain. It's like basically making walls of stone. And I think anything without a save that uses an equivalent spell slot is very valuable. Because since the Infinite Worlds effects aren't spells, you wouldn't be able to benefit from like spell focus from them or anything. So your DCs are going to be lower than they would an equivalent spell if you were to take those.
Mm-hmm.
The other really interesting thing that I've seen in play is the fact that you can swap out lower spell slot effects. You can select two lower spell slot effects using a higher level slot if you want. It means that you can create really interesting combinations of abilities as you gain in levels, right? So if I can expend a third level slot, I can grant concealment against all of one sense. That'd be one thing, because that's third level. Or I could create a brief earthquake, which also dazzles people using the second level slot and the first level slot, right? So I can create an explosion that is a bright flash and shake. I can do that, or I could decide, okay, I'm going to make difficult terrain and have it do damage every round. So I'm creating an acid mist that is hard to hack through, and you can see through it, but you take 2 points of damage a round, for example. So that ability, and as you get higher and higher level spell slots, obviously the number of things that you can combine goes up. And I've seen people have a lot of fun trying to figure out what alternate reality condition am I drawing into this reality to make these two different effects occur.
I like combining first and second so that you can change like magma into a flow of ice that is so much snow that it like buries them in an avalanche for difficult terrain. I think a lot of them are really cool. It's a mechanic that really really rewards creativity, not necessarily in how the mechanics work, but in how you describe what you do. It's very unique in that regard because it is basically build an effect.
Like the one that it makes the acid thing, because it's one of those save for halves and it's continuing damage, so spellcasters have to worry about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like you could take that and you're like, I do that. And then the acid melts all the ground because I'm using a fourth level spell slot and I'm combining that with first level. So now the ground is difficult terrain because I'm melting everything in your square. Enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of what the Witch Warper does actually lends itself to my favorite kind of spellcaster, which is the battlefield control spellcasters, because those are the ones that have the interesting tactical play. And it's a little bit... And how powerful you are at being a battlefield control spellcaster actually has more to do with your strategy as a player than it does any of the numbers on the sheet. So, I mean, difficult terrain filled with acid and like laser swords coming from the ceiling, maybe, yeah, it does a little bit of damage and you get away with that. But that is a big area denial or a very big encouragement to flush a whole bunch of people out from cover.
I also like, I personally... have a design philosophy for most D20 games that you want to build your classes so that any class is more powerful when it has friends around. Bard is the famous example of this, envoy for Starfinder. Three envoys is more than three times as powerful than one envoy. One envoy and a soldier and a technomancer is a good deal more powerful. And I think the Witch Warper lends itself very well to not only you getting creative, but your friends learning how your abilities work and how they can work with you to create options that you couldn't do by yourself or that they couldn't pull off without you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've kind of covered that one. And we spent a good deal of time on it, but I think Infinite Worlds is really the heart of what makes the Witch Warper feel notably and ongoingly different.
I agree with that.
Then at second level, you get Paradigm Shifts. And I got to say, I love the name for Paradigm Shifts. I just love that class feature name, Paradigm Shift. And that's something that Amanda came up with. You pick one up at second level, and then you only get one every three levels, so you don't have many paradigm shifts. And there are a lot more lower-level ones than higher-level ones, so you may well end up only getting one of your low-level paradigm shifts, although you can change them as you go around.
Just saying that, thinking that they're like the masters of not committing to anything, because they can just switch out class features at levels, which is unusual for a lot of classes.
Although it's not unprecedented, right? The fighter Pathfinder can swap out feats. That's something we carried over to the soldier, that they can swap out feats. And there it's military training. Obviously, for the Witch Warper, the ability to alternate reality kind of makes sense that you can. You know what? I didn't spend 3 months analyzing how to push a grenade. I instead spent 3 months analyzing how to prevent wounds.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these powers, and again, this is the selectable power, so it's like... having an operative trick or something like that. But a lot of them are specifically designed to either change what has happened, so like disrupt attack, you put a penalty on an attack roll so that they are less likely to hit, or alter a situation like shift resistance, which causes you to take a creature that is perhaps has resistance to fire and give it resistance to cold instead. And I think that you get a lot of customization feel for which of these you pick and how you use them.
My personal one that fills me with joyful laughter is swapping step. It's one of the highest level ones. But just the idea that you can just like swap two people and all the fun, terrible ways that that can be used both in and out of combat. It makes my inner Loki happy.
I a low level one, prevent wounds, is always good, and I think the average on that is it's similar to a higher level shift that they have for energy resistance. Like the average is the same. So like as you get into these, I'm gonna die at like fourth level situations. It's like, do I take the guaranteed 10 damage off, or do I try to roll for it? And I think those are fun situations to be put into.
The one that we got the most feedback on in the playtest was push grenade, just because people love the concept. And in the original version, there was not a great deal of utility to it because it only applied to grenades. So when we redid this for the final version, we also had it apply to instantaneous effects and spells defined as a burst radius that require a saving throw. So that's your... That is the one where if you think you're going to be running into people that are going to be using the big area technomancer damaging spells, for example.
Explosive blast, yeah.
Or for that matter, explosive blast is the obvious one, right? And it just gives it a little more utility.
Get to look like Goku just knocking them aside. Super cool.
Nice.
There are some that I think are better than others. In general, ones that do not require saves tend to get more value because these are effects that you can't buff the DCs on in general. There are some that are super good. There's one that makes people automatically shaken, one that makes them automatically staggered as well. And some of them do have like the curse restrictions from like Pathfinder 1 hexes of this can only happen to a character once a day. So some of them you're not, like some of the worst ones you're not going to suffer through a lot. But man, they can turn a fight.
I really like the, I forget what it was called, but it's the one where, gosh, what is it? It's the one where you are looking at all the billions of different ways that this thing was done either wrongly or correctly, and it gives your buddy a chance to do it better.
Mm-hmm. I like that one. That one's a good one. I also like the one where, I think it's called, yeah, it's Inhibit, where you you basically show your target with all the realities where the next thing it does is just an overwhelming failure and they become staggered. That's just really funny to me.
Like, you're bullying them.
I mean, like, for me as a person, like, whenever something bad happens, I like for a minute stop and think about all the ways that it could have been gone so much worse. Like, oh god, another reality, I didn't stop in time and that truck hit me. So like, that would be a really effective paradigm shift to use on me. Just make me see all of the different ways I could probably just screw up and die here. That's scary.
This is also
interestingly, I mostly see people pick up Inhibit once they're 8th level because you can also burn a resolve point to use it as a slow spell.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and I was going to say that would optimize because you can use it as a haste, because I've had some people complain about the spell list of the Witch Warper, but there's certain paradigm shifts that basically let you get spells. There's one that just lets you take another class of spells.
Yep.
But there's ones that allow you to burn them as a resolve, so you don't even have to use a spell slot to cast them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is also one of those spells that kind of opens up the moral quandary can of worms, such as when you did Inhibit and showed the character all the terrible ways that it failed this thing or got horribly killed by a truck or something. Did you actually cause thousands of other realities worth of damage? Was that the reason they got hit by the truck?
That's funny. Also scary, but funny.
You know, the answer doesn't matter as long as they get sent to a good isekai.
Fair. One thing that I noticed that the Witch Warper can do that is like really strong is magic deletion, where they can just give themselves spell resistance. Like, and at 12 plus your Witch Warper level, that means that you have a little bit better than a 50% chance for that spell. It's a 55% chance for that spell to just not do anything if it's your level. If it's higher than you, it goes down, of course. But oh, yeah. Like, you know, spell resistance is something that's really hard to get in Starfinder. It's not easy in Pathfinder first edition either. And, you know, it's like, whoa, the Witch Warper can just whoop resolve. I'm gonna play with the dice. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, now you're burning a resolve point to do that, and it only lasts until the end of your next turn. But mm-hmm. that's still a great way when things have gone poorly or you just don't go poorly.
When the person targets your really bad fortitude save with a baleful polymorph spell.
Exactly. For example.
So now one thing that strikes me about paradigm shifts is like that so many of them are reactions. It kind of feels like they all kind of eventually it's very easy to build a Witch Warper that has too many. It's like the Mr. Burns door where all the viruses are trying to go through the door at the same time and they all get stuck, except that's your reaction. I'm wondering if this class wouldn't have benefited first for something like what the Vanguard gets. We're getting, they get extra reactions as they get level, if they get higher level, because then they could like, aha, I get more, you know, well, more ways I can change reality.
That starts to get into spotlight protection for one thing. We wanted the Vanguard to be our master of reactions. And as soon as you start giving alternate classes those abilities, you are taking away from it being a special thing that one character gets. But the other thing is you don't get a whole lot of paradigm shifts, right? Mm. You get one at second and then one every 3 levels. So it's not like every other level. And while there are a bunch that have reactions, rarely are they all going to be relevant at the same time. They could be, but like push grenade is if something's going to explode in a few feet, prevent wounds. Yes, maybe you want to be able to do both of those, but that also means that they become multiplicatively more effective as opposed to linearly. Mm-hmm. So we actually were using that as when I was developing the class, was using the reaction limit to try and encourage you to pick one or two things that you can do reactions with, and then pick other paradigm shifts so that you weren't overloading your reaction quite explicitly as a balancing factor. Okay, so we've gone over the paradigm shifts, unless anyone has more thoughts on those.
Nah.
Well, just note, compound sight, I think, is the most interesting insight bonus in the game, even though it's not the most powerful by a long shot. With compound sight, you sift through many realities, gaining understanding of a task by seeing it attempted dozens of different ways. Choose a skill, you get a plus one insight bonus to that skill, and then every three levels, you can pick a new skill. Sorry, your bonus goes up. But every level, you can change what skill you picked. So if it turns out that you end up thinking, you know what I really want to be able to do is pilot better, you can swap that out. And then two levels later, nah, I'm never actually the person with the best piloting score. I'll switch that to medicine, which is one of the flexible things I like about the class.
Mm-hmm.
Alternate outcome comes in at sixth level, which as a reaction, again, you can reroll an attack roll, saving throw, ability check, or skill check that you attempt. Or you can cause a critical hit against you or an ally to instead be a normal hit. And that just, if that's what you choose, there's no roll or check. It just happens. You can only do that once a day, twice at 12th and three times at 18th. But I think it's strongly thematically linked to what makes the Witch Warper interesting as a mid to high level power.
Yeah, and I saw later on they gave a spell that did a similar thing as well, too. Well, with the rerolling like damage and stuff like that. So it's something that's consistent across all their abilities, paradigms included.
Yeah, it's also one of those abilities that when you use it, especially like if you're using it to make a crit, not a crit, or some of those like very life-altering situations, that the rest of the party is going to be extremely thankful that your character was there to have that effect. It's a lot like Breath of Life the first time somebody uses that in a campaign and how game-changing that moment is when you go somebody going from, oh no, I just lost my bar. I didn't.
Yeah, that critical is kind of crucially important, right? And again, you at sixth level, you can only do it once a day. So there's a good chance you're going to save it for when it's really, really important. One of the interesting things I've seen about powers like this that can have a major impact that you can't use very often, especially when you can use them as a reaction. So you're not having to choose between that and the normal things you're doing your turn, is that players will sometimes use these to change what they think is a good idea without it ever actually coming into play. So if someone is down on damage, for example, and they're like, well, a good critical hit could take me out of this. I don't know. I want to run from here across where I'll have no cover over to there and get the MacGuffin for the scenario. And someone can say, well, we've got a Witch Warper with us, so you can take that risk. And if someone hits you and it's a crit, they can just make it not a crit. So that risk is worth taking. And then even if it doesn't come up, even if no one crits you, that ability has impacted the decisions and events of play without ever actually getting used.
Interesting
about that, and it's hard to explain that, especially like in group setting, like for most tables, because people just think of what this thing does when I activate it. There's kind of a concept in competitive gaming of you keeping abilities because you're still a threat while you have abilities. So it's an interesting way, I think, to explain it to when somebody might go, "Oh, it's not super cool when it happens, or it doesn't get to happen enough." So I'm going to use that. That's a good line.
That's like when you're talking about ultimates in Overwatch
or Roadhog's Hook.
Or two untapped islands in Magic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're then looking at the last few abilities, which are way up there. But at 19th level, you get Unfold Existences, which is one of my very favorite things about the Witch Warper. Although, if you've got a 19th level Witch Warper, people are going to notice other stuff way before they notice this. But with Unfold Existences, you select five paradigm shifts that you don't normally have, and to a maximum 8th level, but this is where I was talking about you might not have many of those lower level ones. And then you can use the selected paradigm shifts a total number of days times per day equal to your charisma modifier. So at this point, your charisma modifier is going to be in that +6/+7 range. So you suddenly have five more paradigm shifts that you can use a grand total of 6, 7, maybe 8 times a day.
And you take all of the ones for the reaction with it.
You could.
Yeah.
And you can only use them a limited number of times anyway. So, you know.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's what, oh man, this is how you manage to ruin the fact that Starfinder doesn't have half-hour long single rounds of combat. When you have to, something happened to my character? Hold on a minute. 10 minutes later? Okay, I can't do anything about that.
Well, to be fair, they would have had to pick their five paradigm ships. They'd have to pick their five paradigm ships in advance, like when they get that ability. And it's right. a 19th level ability. It's not like, say, the Brawler, where you're level one and now you're making a billion choices all the time. Like, go ahead.
One of the design principles in Starfinder, in fact, is to never let anyone sort through a huge list of 50 or more options at the table. And the Brawler is exactly why we did that, right? So we have some adaptive combat-like feats, but they say pick three combat feats. Okay, you can choose to use one of those for one round. And this is similar. Pick five paradigm shifts. You'll know what they are. At 19th level, you should be very familiar with how the class works. And then you can see if one of those five is useful, as opposed to saying, hey, once a day, you can use any paradigm shift that exists. And the other reason I don't want to do that is that when you write that in a core rulebook, you have no idea how big that list is going to be, because companies need to sell more books. Paradigm shifts are things that you can select level. So obviously, anytime anyone wants to add more Witch Warper content, they're going to add more paradigm shifts. So even if there are 30 paradigm shifts when you write that ability, by the time someone uses it 8 years later, there could be 160 paradigm shifts. And so you just don't want to ever encourage people to sit down. I mean, I think with a Brawler, it was clearly too late. There were too many combat feats. and not only can it slow things down, but it means that with some groups, and no group I would play with ever, of course, but with some groups, someone might be better at figuring out what combat feat you need than you are as a Brawler. So you have the unfun situation that you're like, oh, I will decide to take weapon focus. And someone else will say, oh, that's a stupid thing for you to do right now. Instead, you should take this book from the Complete Weapon Master's Handbook and down here. And I'm sure you meet this prerequisite. You're like, I don't even have that book. I just want to hit something. So those are player dynamic things at the table that we considered when we decided in Starfinder, just a general rule. And this is something I've talked to Alex fairly often.
All the time. I get slapped in the hand about this all the time.
Have a short, tight list of things you can pick. And I think five is the most we've ever done in official rules. And by we, yes. I mean they, since I don't work for Paizo. It's the most they've ever done in official content. I'm sure there are alternate realities where I do still work at Paizo, but this is not one of them.
Speaking of that, there's a capstone. It's Reality Stutter.
Yep.
It's great. You you can spend your resolve point to just say, hey, I'm going to use this paradigm shift. It doesn't take an action. Enjoy. It's like that ability where I said it would be great if I had more reactions. Well, you have as many actions as you have points in charisma now. And unless it says it can be as a user action, you can use it pretty much at any time during your turn for free. And it's pretty awesome, to be completely honest. I'd say that it's probably the game's flashiest capstone. I don't know if you guys would agree with me, but I think that something that just lets me say, hey, it's pretty great.
Yeah, it's a good one. As far as Slash, I think the Vanguard has a pretty good one. But yeah, it's up there.
I mean, but there's also the final bonus ability that it has, which is maybe the most iconic of all capstone abilities, which is Warp Reality. Which is kind of what you're really hoping for when you try to play a class like the Witch Warper. I mean, this is when you get your full Wanda on and can just rewrite parts of the universe. It's basically Wish. It's a much more reined in Wish, but it is Wish.
Well, I mean, it is almost exactly the same as the Starfinder version of Wish that the Technomancer gets at 20th level. Mm-hmm. So each of our spellcasters has a wish-like spell that they can get access to at that level, and how they do it is a little different. With Reality Stutter, it's just once a week, you can do it. Congratulations, have a good time, it's a spell-like ability, move on.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to note, Alex said he thought it was the flashiest. I personally consider the Soldier's Kill Shot to be the flashiest,
because
when it works, you just unload round one kill shot, make a save, or die. And yes, frequently things do make a save, but if you're running around with a fighter with kill shot, you are going to, as a group, have done everything you can to lower people's saving throws.
That's true.
And there's no limitation saying that you can only do this once a day or whatever. So I'm a big fan of Killshot.
I really like
Rios. You can only use it on a given creature once, but if you've got a huge dex and a ton of resolve points and you've taken extra resolve and you're not worried about it, you can just run around Killshot, Killshot, Killshot. Someone's going to fail their saving throw, and that's going to be a real time saver.
Hey, James, I know what I want Shoku to do now.
Oh, let's hope he survives that long.
I know, right? I got to survive Devastation Arc.
Yeah, little boy's full of worms already.
I got those worms removed.
Okay, you think you did?
Oh, no.
I also want to ask your guys' opinion on something that was a huge deal when this class was in playtest. Okay. That we brought the whole Starfinder team together. We had a conversation about this one question, the name. When we pitched it as the Witch Warper, there were a lot of people who felt that if you call it a Witch Warper, that means you've designed a class that warps witches. And so it should be called the Warp Witch instead of the Witch Warper. And that feedback was significantly, and it wasn't the majority, but it was a significant enough portion of the official playtest feedback we got that the group sat down and had a conversation about it. What do you guys think? Witch Warper or Warp Witch?
I think Warp Witch is easier to explain to people who have never played a Paizo property. But I think if you had played any Paizo properties or had any familiarity, Witch Warper flows, because you already have the expectation from the Witch class of, even if it does different things, of, hey, it's a spellcaster and it does warping.
Yeah, I like Witch Warper, because Warp Witch makes me think that you're going to start introducing some other concept, and it plays with this. It doesn't even require me understanding. If I hear something called a Warp Witch, I automatically assume that there is something called the Warp in this sci-fi setting that I need to know about. And as opposed to Witch Warper, which, you know, obviously Pathfinder Witch, but it also, like, one of the most iconic characters right now in all of media is Scarlet Witch, who has a very similar power set. So you just instantly sort of get the idea of what this thing's doing, just by its name.
I think that Witch Warper sounds better. I think it rolls off the tongue better, because it puts the emphasis on the first syllable, and therefore it sounds much cooler than Warp Witch, which has fewer syllables and also puts warp in focus. Also, I'm pretty sure the warp is a thing in like Warhammer 40K, right?
Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah, and so to call it a Warp Witch makes it sound like you have a property called the Warp, which will get you sued. So I like Witch Warper.
I mean, I don't think we would actually get sued, despite the fact they tried to trademark Space Marine. Yeah. Just because, you know, warp speed, for instance, significantly predates 40K.
Well, the Space Marine thing is especially interesting because they tried to get a book taken off of Amazon that was written before their company existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Lensman, E.E. Smith, had Space Marines very specifically, and that's from the 1930s. So, but that's a whole... In a different reality, we got way down that rabbit hole in this conversation. But in this one, we're going to stick with this. Does anyone have final thoughts before we go to maybe some questions from Twitch?
I like the Witch Warper. I have some concerns about its spell list, which we didn't really talk about. And that's true. Mostly that the majority of the Witch Warper spells are saving throw spells. And the Witch Warper does have an ability that lets them toss spell slots to give the shaken condition, which is a good way to penalize saving throws. And the Witch Warper also could pick bluff as their alternate compound sight. There we go. Their compound sight skill, which then they could use to take the new spell feint feat. So like, there are ways to lower that penalty, but I do think that when you have a spellcaster and the games, at least in my experience, when I play with my spellcasters, it generally feels like I never really have more than a 50-50 shot. And it feels kind of bad if everything I do is just like never better than 50%. I know when I play my soldier, I can make decisions that give me a better shot to actually hit and hurt things than 50-50. But at least for me in general, the spell list is sort of like my concern. Like, there are definitely avenues I can take to avoid it. I could grab like Summon Monster. There are some really good options that you could grab using Eldritch Secret that are very helpful if you take it as your fifth level one. But in general, that spell list for me has always been my big like, That's just my opinion, though.
James, I saw a lot of nodding.
Because that's kind of where I also fell, was the spell list. I also had a problem with where a lot of the spells had SR, but in subsequent books, there's been some things like, I think it's like Acid Fog or Corrosive Fog, and Pact Worlds is on their list, and that's also no SR, and they also get some of the, there's like a junk spell that they get in that as well. So they're starting to branch out, and this is, it was a problem that I think would have been solved with time. And that's just kind of what it is. I like the theme of it. I think as far as my enjoyment and the math of it, I need to wait till there's more options that I know how to impact. You know what I mean? Like, some people are better at some things than others. I am not good at changing 55% into, or 50% into 55%. That's not my specialty. My specialty is getting to 80% and just pounding 80%. So.
Well, and that leads to a really fascinating question, which is how often do you think it is fun for a class's highest level spell to work? And when it works, how much should it utterly incapacitate what is quite possibly the only foe in the encounter? And that is not a conversation that we got time for left on this. That's a whole game design thing. But I know that frequently game designers and players and GMs all have different answers to that question, which can make it tricky. Yeah.
I have a one word answer, or a two word answer.
Yeah.
Mind thrust.
What about it? It does way more damage on average than spells of its level.
It does. However, it also has a passive effect that if I fail my mind thrust save, if I use it on something and it doesn't do well, I don't feel so bad about throwing the spell slot. So, like, you know, it has a backup effect that's useful. And I think that if more spells in Starfinder had partial effects, the fact that saving throws were kind of on the high side and take a lot of effort to lower wouldn't feel quite as bad. But again, that's just me. Like, when I play my Mystic, I'm like, maybe I can help mind thrust. Oh, you failed. You passed? That's fine. I guess you take 8 damage, whatever.
Well, yeah, and kind of
spell, for example, is the same way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. But kind of to agree with James on this one is because of how familiar I am with Starfinder and knowing that saving throws in this one are even harder to guarantee at, especially you say the highest level spell, and that is true, but it's also like the thing that they're expecting you to do against challenges that are often higher level than you, because all the adventure design in a lot of games centers around one really powerful thing and then maybe some things that don't matter surrounding it. And so you're always going to be in a situation where that 55% is more like a 35% that the cool thing you can do will actually be useful. And if you're playing with a bad GM, that really becomes a 0% because they've got plot armor anyway. And so I avoid saving throw based spells in any version of D20 almost to a fault. And that's usually how I'm able to make my spellcasters be extra good at being spellcasty. I have a tendency to break games with spellcasters. And the Witch Warpers, you know, the fact that so much of their list is depending on saving throws that I know I can't do, it really means that they, in my mind, it really just has a tiny spell list.
Since it only gets a certain number of spells known, as long as that tiny spell list is still useful and interesting to you, you get at least one Witch Warper out of that. Although, of course, it does limit your ability to have 5 alt Witch Warpers that feel different. Okay, we got a few questions that I want to address. Someone asked, are any of the Stellar players planning on forcing a Witch Warper onto their characters? Anyone want to address that?
There was an alternate reality where Enoch was a Witch Warper.
Yeah, he was supposed to be a Bear Witch, and at the very last minute, I pulled back because we needed a hacker.
Yeah, we really need that hacker. If you saw last night's episode, we really need that hacker. Yeah. Although I will say that Cliff did really good hacking the things.
And Dungeon Novice notes that being a Witch Warper would be terrible. It'd be kind of fun to watch a character become one during a campaign that could add a cool level of RP. Certainly, if he were to ever multi-class into being a Witch Warper, I think that would be a fascinating role-playing experience. There'd be a lot of interesting stories that you could tell about that.
Definitely.
Someone mentioned that Warp Witch looks like Warp Witch, and it doesn't sound as good. I don't know what a twitch is, but yes, the a battle twitch would obviously be a concern.
We should take a screenshot of that, send it to Amanda, and see if a twitch ends up on like extreme in like season two or whatever.
Fair.
Okay. he's twitch the what is it, the patra twitch the patra
patra twitch. I won't do that. I think we went through the Witch Warper. Now I'm almost saying Warp Witch, which, of course, in an alternate reality, we did call it the Warp Witch.
You need to stop phasing all these realities together.
It's a 19th level ability. I can't help it. They just all get stuck in.
your presence just is a black hole that blends the realities into a reality smoothie. You are the bad guy.
I very much enjoyed this chat with y'all, and I appreciate your thoughts on this. There are times I hope I didn't come off as defensive, because interestingly, when you're the developer and someone's like, yeah, I think this is a weakness, and you're like, no, I care for... Okay, it's obviously everything's not perfect, but I really appreciate your all's feedback.
You sat there and let us trash the spell list quite nicely. You did a good job.
But see, I didn't write the spell list, so that's... Anyway, no. That's,
that's funny. So it's,
it's only partially true anyway.
Well, we have like a minute, you know. Let me ask you a question, Owen. Is there anything about the Witch Warper as its developer that you wish you could have gotten in but you weren't able to?
Yes. Create Pit.
Wow.
James' face was great. It was like,
in the original version, one of the things you could do with your ability to adjust all of reality with your infinite worlds was create a hole in the ground. And I took the text for that from the Create Pit spell. And we carefully placed it so that it was coming about the time where a lot of things start to be able to fly anyway, so that, and their ranged weapons are more common. So it would not have been even as effective, in my opinion, as Create Pit is in Pathfinder, because Create Pit can be a fight ender in Pathfinder. But there was a large pushback from people that kept saying, well, that means I can just create a pit at a doorway and go under the door, and suddenly I can bypass this entire adventure. And I kept pointing out that A, the rules specifically tell you can't do that. And B, this is the exact wording of the Create Pit spell, and being able to do that isn't a problem in those adventures that anyone has ever mentioned. But basically, everyone else came together and said, look, the amount of feedback you're getting says that even if you find a way to write this, that there's no way anyone should be able to misunderstand it, they will misunderstand it. So you are introducing too much confusion into the game by allowing people to make pits with infinite worlds. So I really wish I could have done a rewrite and had another full set of playtests on it and addressed just that one question, because it drove me crazy that this wording that we had that has worked, that has been out for years, almost suddenly 10. When I put those words in the sci-fi setting, everyone thinks they can use it to breach a hull in the starship side or get through a vault door, all this stuff that you clearly can't do. Players and GMs were all talking about how clearly overpowered it was. So I just had to give up on it.
Now that's
so sad.
I would love like a 6 level Witch Warper spell that is create airlock. but like you're in a forest. Yeah. Go.
Create vacuum.
It's your problem now.
It's like Dimension Door, but to the center of the sun, really.
Oh, that's funny.
Thanks, though. It's a good question. I haven't had an opportunity to rant about that outside of the Paizo office. So.
Oh, well, I'm very happy, and I hope someday that somebody whose reality is still within the Paizo office sees this video and is like, it's time. We make Owen's dream from another reality into this reality, and we add this spell back in the game. And oh, God, no! There's so much complaining on the forums.
Oh, they're all so dumb. They don't read it.
Let's be real, James. This game has too many rules.
Huh? I mean, there's a legitimate school of game design that says if you write a rule knowing people will misread it, the fact that they're misreading it doesn't prevent that from being a bad rule, right? If you're presenting it and you know that it's going to cause problems, the problems don't go away just because you're right.
Terrible. Ain't that the truth? That's a life lesson from Owen right
now. Wow. That's Owen dropping down the heavy boom.
Well, so this is one of the things I learned in driver's ed as a teenager that was the most important lesson that I took away from high school. This is one of like the top five lessons that my driver's ed teacher told us. And what he said was this: if you're doing everything right and someone else hits you and it's their fault, you were still in an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter how right you were once someone else hits you and you're in an accident. For insurance and all sorts of other things, it matters. Yeah. But keep an eye out for people doing things wrong, because otherwise you'll get into accidents that aren't your fault, but you could have avoided. And that's just, that has been one of my guiding principles for decades now.
That's actually really similar to my very first driver's ed lesson here in Eastern Kentucky. We are, of course, one of the centers for the non-existent coal mining industry now, but back when we had a coal mining industry. And the very first word of my very first driving lesson, the rule that they gave me is, okay, rule number one, coal truck goes first.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, folks, I think that wraps us up for this episode of No Direction Beyond, where we're taking a look at the Witch Warper.
Yes. And another reality, aka another episode, we'll be back with more classes from Calm.
Yeah, we got two more. Yes. And then maybe by the time we've covered those, Paizo will announce a new book. And then we can speculate about classes.
Ooh. We can always speculate about classes.
Well, speculate about classes they mention, right? We can just... Maybe they'll add someone that fires their brain at you as an explosive, right? We can speculate on everything, but without a little basis, it's going to get weird.
A brain blaster.
Exactly. Well, I think brain sounds better, but...
No!
All right, Parham, since we're in the reality where you're here, how about you take us out?
All right, everyone. If you want more fantastic No Direction content, such as this, covering all the Starfinder, Pathfinder, and general nerdity and role-playing goodness, you can find us at nodirectionpodcast.com. And while you're there, take a look over on the right. You'll see a little purple button that's not very little that you can click on to join our Discord community. It is the chillest place to hang out for Starfinder, Pathfinder, and general nerdity. As well, you will find our Patreon link. And honestly, gang, we could not keep doing the amount of content that we do without the support of our patrons. So for all of you that are helping us get these shows out, we super appreciate your support. I mean, we're up to literally a podcast every single day now. It's a little much. But we hope you all enjoy all those podcasts, and we are only able to do that because of your help. So, until next time, go beyond with no direction.